Watch the Throne. What a lovely day. This is episode 14, The Legend of Bagger Vance from 2000, directed by Robert Redford. I'm Mike Manzi.
And I'm Joey Lewandowski. I'm glad you brought up that Robert Redford thing, because this movie has two Cheyenne connections in that it's a game about old-timey golf, and it's also a Robert Redford-directed movie. I was just watching, as I was watching this movie, I was like, it'd be really cool if Cheyenne was that little kid caddy, but he's not, that he would grow up to be, you know, Jack Lemmon, but he was not, and instead we get this movie.
What was the other Redford movie when he was the...
The Company You Keep, where he's the journalist.
Yeah. That was a good one. That was a very unknown movie.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, an early one for us, a late one for him.
Yes, yes, yes. But and a discovered film, I feel.
Absolutely.
When we watch that one. Yeah, here we are again. It's old-timey golf.
Old-timey golf.
As far as golf movies go, I mean, I'm not a big golf fan, but I love Caddyshack. I love Happy Gilmore. I think when you're making fun of the sport, it's a little bit of a better movie than when they're taking it this dead seriously. I don't know. This was an interesting one.
Had you seen this one before or no?
No. I had only known sort of its reputation to a degree. The Will Smith role at the time seemed, even then, kind of problematic in the press and everything. Just watching it now, I was trying to prepare myself for Will Smith to show up.
Yeah, because this is a movie, I went through like a little bit of a Will Smith phase before I had a Nicolas Cage phase, and so I saw a bunch of his movies. This is the first one, I think, for any show on our podcast network that we've done a Will Smith movie. He will be back in 8 years for another Charlize movie, for Hancock, which is a movie that I like more than this, even though I don't remember much of it, and I don't think it's as good as I want it to be. But anyway, we do have a little bit of the magical or the mystical Negro trope here, where he's just this wise black man who comes in to save a young white man life or whatever. So that's a little hashtag problematic, but this is not good by any stretch of the imagination, but I don't mind it. I don't think it's bad. It was a box office bomb. I was just looking it up before we started recording. It had a budget of $80 million. I'm sure Will Smith commanded probably $20 million of that, but it only made $40 at the box office, and critics panned it. So not very successful. What I liked about it in terms of what we're doing here is that Charlize, at least in the first 20 minutes, half an hour, is really in it and like really good and playing this sort of like, I think what would typically be sort of a man's role in terms of like this like organizer, right? Like I like what she's doing here, another return to her southern twang. But then as the movie goes on, she basically disappears.
Yeah, yeah. A couple things I want to address there. I think, first off, I think Redford actually handles the magical Negro trope or whatever. I think he handles it pretty well. Like, this movie has a lot of tact. Like, he's not as overt as I was expecting. You know, I feel like it's as respectful as possible, if I had to say something. The other thing about Charlize is, I feel like at this point, people think she's from the South. Like, she does so much Southern accent work in her films up to this point. It's like, oh, where are you from? Like, Alabama? It's like, no, I'm from Africa. And I have to agree, like, this movie is a mess. I just have to say, like, up front, like, I didn't know who we were supposed to be following. Whose story is it? Is it young Jack Lemmon as he's dying on the golf course, recounting his life flashing before his eyes? Is it Matt Damon, who is this sort of traumatized war hero who can't golf anymore? Or is it Charlize Theron, who's, like, the entire first half hour of this movie? It's, like, her movie. I was like, is this, like, her? Is she gonna pick up the golf club also? Like, what is going on here? This movie's all over the place. But she maintains, she's always good, she's very good in this, she's beautiful in this. Yeah, she reminds me of that character in The Nick, you know, the daughter of the investor who runs the hospital. I can't remember her name exactly.
Nurse Elkins?
No, the blonde lady.
Oh, that is in love with algae. Yes.
Yeah, like if she was born a man, she'd be running shit in this time of America.
Charlize is only running shit because her dad dies, right? And so her dad dad kills himself. And that was the other thing that, like, your Letterboxd review was like, is this a kid's movie? Because I can't figure out why the tone would be. And I was watching it, and I was like, there's no way this is a kid's movie because the dad kills himself. Like,
no.
It's very weird. Like, I agree with you that there's a weird tone, but there's, like, a lot of dark stuff here that's not necessarily for kids.
But to me, it felt like Disney dark. That isn't, like, real... I didn't feel like that was real violence, per se. Like, that felt like Bambi's mom getting shot to me in a lot of ways. Like, I don't feel like they were going for a children's film, but I just feel like, ultimately, the way it plays, it's, like, I don't know, it's so heavy-handed and, like, on the nose. It just feels like it's trying to lead you along every step of the way, like a film designed for younger kids, maybe, you know, something like golf, which isn't the easiest game to follow when you're a little kid. But I feel like it does a good job of trying to weave that into like an inspirational narrative that children could get.
I guess. I don't know. Like, I don't know. Like, is this movie supposed to be, like, evangelizing golf? Like, is it supposed to be, hey, golf is beautiful, you should play golf?
To take a thing from your Letterboxd review, and I saw this in the trivia, is that this is supposedly based on, like, ancient Indian texts with the and all that kind of stuff. So I wonder if it's just golf as a metaphor to try and get across those types of teachings. And then again, if that was the case, I wish that was a little more overt. I wish Redford had tried to say up front, like, look, this is a parable. We're trying to say, like, I'm adapting, like, this ancient text and relating it to these characters, but I don't pick up any of that.
I think where the problem there comes from is that this is based on a book, which I did not realize. The author of the book didn't admit that this was based on the Bhagavad Gita. The author of the book didn't say that it was based on that until 2000, which is probably after this, like, probably when they were doing press for this movie, he said. So I don't know if he talked to Robert Redford about it, but it seemed like this guy was like, oh, let me take these names. Like, there is Krishna, which is also known as Bhagavan, which is where the name Bagger Vance comes from.
Oh, Bagger Vance, okay.
And then Arjuna, Ranulf Juna, comes from Arjuna, A-R-J-U-N-A, which is another character in there. And so apparently Krishna teaches Arjuna, like, Krishna is masquerading as his chariot driver and teaches him all these life lessons, and that's where this through line comes from. Because I guess, like, because Will Smith is teaching Matt Damon how to golf, but he's also teaching him how to, like, focus and sort of recover from his PTSD.
Oh, man. We need John Brooks for this episode.
That's what I was thinking as we were watching. I was like, it's a shame that he didn't sign up for this one.
I don't know, because, like, I mentioned Happy Gilmore earlier, and, like, I feel like that movie is making fun of this movie with the Chubbs character coming in and teaching Happy how to be a real golfer and being his mentor and everything like that. And it's sort of flipping this idea on its head and saying, like, it's just, like, a normal thing. Like, it's just a thing that comes along with sports, you know? It's like, everybody has, like, if you're a golfer, your caddy should be your mentor. Like, he should be involved in your teachings. If you're a boxer, you have, you know, Rocky had Mickey. You know what I'm saying? Like, everybody has somebody. So I don't feel like that per se is enough to say, like, oh, I based it on this text, because those teachings have just been handed down for so long. They're just weaved into, like, storytelling in general. Like, there's kind of no way to get around that if you're doing a sports movie. I also saw that the other guys that Matt Damon plays in this are based on real golfers.
Right.
And, like, a lot of this movie is, like, taken from matches they played.
Right.
So I was like, just do that movie. Just do the movie of the real dudes. Like, take Matt Damon out of this, take Will Smith out of this, and, like, that might have been a more entertaining film for me.
I haven't read the book. I didn't look into the book. I think the book is probably this story, which is sort of like a fictionalized adaptation of these two golfers' lives and them playing against this other guy or whatever. But I think the movie version was always going to be this story, because I also read that when Robert Redford was first working on this, he was going to cast himself and Morgan Freeman as the Matt Damon and Will Smith roles. And he's like, it'd probably be better if they were younger. And so that's when he found Matt Damon and Will Smith. I think that the thread here of this fictional golfer with this magical Negro helping him through, that's always going to be the center of this movie, which is unfortunate, because you're right. Like, if it was just like a head-to-head, I don't know how the story, I don't know if Charlize would fit into this movie. I guess you could sort of adapt it so that, like, one of the two golfers, one of these two legendary golfers, either Hagen or Jones, is from the town that she's in. Like, they have to get him as the local boy done good, right? Like, that is possible, too. It just feels like this third guy, it's like, he's the one that's going to drum up interest. He's sort of the no-name, the former, the has-been, the was, the war hero who ran
he's
off
like
and became
the hometown
an alcoholic
hero. Yeah.
I feel like you could probably do that with a lot, with either one of the other two guys if you rewrite it, but I don't know.
Yeah, I was watching this saying, like, I liked the Shia movie more because it was more of just a straightforward story and everything. And this, I don't know. I think this one has too many parts to a degree, and I think that's part of the problem is there's, like, two stories here. There's, like, the Matt Damon stuff, and then there's the real life stuff, and it just feels like it clashes. At one point I was like, oh, how great would it have been if they're on the golf course and they see Will Smith and he's, like, an amazing golfer, and Charlize is like, he's in the tournament, you know, and, like, Matt Damon becomes his caddy because he's, like, lost an arm in the war, but he's still got all the knowledge to be a caddy or something. Or, like, just have it be the little kid, since he's the one telling this story. What if he's, like, this wonder kid golf caddy who convinces Matt Damon to play again and then has the knack for picking the right club, and the kid is the caddy, sort of like, I guess that's more like the Shia movie too, where he had the little the little fat kid is his daddy. But like, there are ways. This is, again, like, we've run into this problem so much, and I feel like it's more inherent in the Charlize movies we've watched, is that, like, it's frustrating because the core is there, and it's just like what ends up there at the finish line is just like not as satisfying as what you can see could have finished. We run into that problem a lot, like the potential and the squandered sort of potential, or the not making up their mind, not deciding, you know. And I think that's what's so great about a lot of the Soderbergh stuff we covered, is like, he makes decisions and sticks with them, and this one, it just feels like they couldn't decide.
Another thing that I'm unclear about, that was that I sort of thought about as you were talking, was, can people see Will Smith? Like, yes, right? But he's also not a real person.
Yeah, like, that bothered me a lot. Like, if you're gonna make him magical, go all the way. I thought for sure he was a ghost, and then when the little boy saw him, I was like, well, he's a child, and he had, you know, like, the rules are different. Children can see different things. Like, he hasn't been corrupted by adulthood or anything, so he's pure. And then he's at the tournament and people are shaking his hand. I'm like, no, he's supposed to be a ghost or something.
Because especially at the end of the movie, like, he basically escorts Jack Lemmon off to heaven or something, right? Like,
absolutely.
I don't know.
Yeah, that was a big misstep for me. I was like, you're introducing him like he's not real, like he's in Matt Damon's head. I would have gone for that too. Like, that would have been great if they did, maybe it's too much because of the time period, but if you did some kind of like Fight Club reveal at the end where like Bagger was never there and Matt Damon was just like talking to himself on the course and like, you know, picking his own club.
That might as well be what it is. Like, that might as well be what it is. Because there's, like, there's no real proof that he's actually there. Like, maybe they're shaking Matt Damon's hand. Who knows? I feel like there's a mystical, magical theme here, but they just don't want to go that, like, crazy mind-bending route, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, and I feel like if you introduce that element, you have to sort of exploit it. You know, you have to go further than they do, at least. You need to, you know, own it, right? I mean, there's magic here. Like, make it magical. Like, go full Disney. I'm not saying he has to, like, vanish. Like, I actually thought when he was on the beach at the end dancing, he was going to, like, do one of those disappearing acts and just, like, sort of vanish off screen. I don't think you
got to. And then there was only one set of footprints on the beach.
That's basically what it is. But, I mean, there would have been ways to sort of, you know, make this more wondrous, or, you know what I'm saying? Like, just, like, make it more sort of fantastical, or, you know, make us feel the magic of it more, because I feel like that's what it wants. It wants you to feel like wonderful, like, about it, and there is no real wonder here.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, there is nothing really wonderful. There's nothing really special or unique. The one thing that I do want to give this movie credit for, you were talking when we did The Greatest Game Ever Played, the Shia golf movie. You said that movie you thought was shot really well golf-wise. I think Robert Redford does a really good job of shooting this movie golf-wise. There's also a point to be made that, like, three quarters of this movie is golf. Like, there's, like, a little bit of setup, and then, like, the rest of the movie is the tournament. Like, there is a lot of golf in this movie.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly that this movie looks beautiful. Like, there are some shots that are just, like, incredible in this. Mostly, like, the sunset silhouetted type of stuff. But, yeah, Redford definitely knows what he's shooting. I was really surprised, like, most of this movie is the tournament. I thought that for sure, like, that was just going to be happening in the middle of the second act, and that most of it was going to be sort of social politics. But that's not what it's about. It's literally like getting his swing back. That's the whole movie, is like, you lost your swing, we got to find it, and, you know, or find a new swing. Or it's more about him rediscovering who he is as a person after the war on the golf course, so that, like, he can go on to be a functional person.
To what end, though? Like, I don't know. I don't care. Like, we don't... Like, he's not real. He's not a real person. I mean, I guess you also can't have a movie about a real person visited by, like, a ghost of some kind that then goes on to be a good person. Like, that doesn't make sense. But I don't know, like, to what end. Like, because he doesn't win the tournament. They all tie. They shake hands at the end. I don't know.
Oh, I thought he won.
No, they tied.
Oh, that wasn't even clear, because he did that thing where his ball moved.
Right, yeah, no, because he was going to win. And then he moved the ball, he took the stroke. That was, like, his development or his growth or his maturity. Yeah. That's when Will Smith leaves. He's like, I can't teach him anymore. He's already good to go. He goes off to that beach. Matt Damon makes the crazy, crazy putt. That ties them, and the three of them all tie at the top of the leaderboard, and they all just shake the gentlemanly hand. So I guess Charlize gets to keep her $10,000? I don't know. I have no idea. But, like, the movie also isn't about, like, considering how much the movie is about golf, the movie doesn't care about the golf at all. Like, it doesn't care who wins. None of them win. You thought somebody won. I think the movie makes you think that somebody won.
Yes,
it's
it
just,
does.
The movie's like, hey, this is about personal growth. This is about becoming a good person. This is about overcoming and conquering your demons. And that's it. And we don't care about anything else. I'm not sure, are he and Charlize together at the end? I don't think so, right? Because, like, he wins her back, and then, like, two scenes later, she comes, she's like, no, I can't do this. Like, what do you, like, that was a cool scene. We'll get to that. They're not together, so he's just on his own, right?
Yeah, I believe so. And it's still the Great Depression. So, I mean, like, it's not like things are great out there either. Yeah, you know, the movie is weird. It's like, it's not about golf, but it's like about sportsmanship and like character and honor and being, you know, and like doing the right thing. It like fits all that stuff in around the sort of construct of golf. So like it just, that's just the game. It could have been any game, I feel, really. These were the times, I suppose, where like, you know, this is what the book was about, so this is the game we're going with here. There's not, like, a lot going on here, basically. Like, and I was just a little surprised. Like, that's it. If it just felt, like, kind of repetitive. It's like, I knew he was going to get his swing back eventually, so I was just like, oh, he's going to succeed and fail, succeed and fail, succeed and fail, you know? And then eventually he's going to come to his senses and do the right thing, and that's where he's going to ascend as a person, and Bagger is just going to saunter off at that point. And so, like, I feel like it's just kind of predictable, and it doesn't do enough extra stuff in there to make it stand out over, you know, other movies, really. I mean, only Charlize and like what she's doing in this is kind of keeping me engaged, really. Like when she's showing up, she's so there, you know, she's like very much a big presence of this movie, even when she's not on screen, because it's like her golf course and it's her idea and it's her this and everything. And so she's really keeping me engaged here.
She is too. It's between her and the way that the golf looks. But what's sad for her is that she starts out as such a strong character, but she's objectified a couple times at least, in that the opening voiceover, Jack Lemmon is like,
oh,
Matt Damon won a lot of things, but the best thing he ever won was her heart. And it's like, well, that's not true. But then the other thing later is that when she comes to Matt Damon before he agrees, and she's like, what's it going to take? And this is, it's sort of, it's this weird scene where it's like empowering and also objectifying, where she's like, what's it going to take for you to golf if I have sex with you? And she says that, like, if I have sex with you, will you play? And he's like, yeah, I guess that'll do it. And she's like, oh, good, I thought it was going to take more than that. Like, I like that as, like, a, she's doing whatever she needs to do to get there. But then what's creepy about the scene is that Matt Damon knows little Jack Lemmon is awake and, like, is letting him watch her undress. Like, it's just, that's weird. Like, I guess that's, again, showing how much of a scumbag Matt Damon is. But at the same time, it's like, this is weird. Like, it should be this moment where, like, Charlize is using her feminine strength to get what she needs to do, even if she's not really into Matt Damon, like, which she's clearly not at this point. Like, she's doing what she needs to do to honor her father, get this golf tournament going, restore money to the town and to the golf course and all this different stuff. And then for the little kid to be, like, peeping Tom at her, it's just uncomfortable.
Yeah, and I wonder almost if that kid just wasn't in the movie at all, everything would land a lot better. Like, I just don't get the weight of any of it, because it's sort of projected from my perspective. I'm seeing this through the kid's eyes, so like it's all just through this childlike filter, so it comes across way too innocent for me. And then it gets to like creepy, because the kid's in the room and Matt Damon is like, you want to see your first naked lady? Like, I'm gonna hook you up. And that's just strange. If that kid wasn't in the room, it would have meant something to me, because one of the better things that's set up in this film is their history before the war, like in that opening montage and everything. Like, if Jack Lemmon's voiceover is good for anything, it's only in that opening montage where like an entire movie is condensed into like 20 minutes. But then that voiceover keeps coming back and I'm just like, dude, I know, I'm watching it, I can see, like, I don't need you to like walk me through this movie with your voiceover also. I'm getting it. But yeah, I was wondering if that kid, you know, and again, another version of this movie, just like do this, but eject the boy, and then it'll all sort of be through the eyes of the adult, and then maybe the tone will work better for me.
I don't know how to fix this movie. I guess that works. It feels like it's just such a mess. I don't know. I don't like the voiceover, but I do like in the beginning. What I really like, especially liked about the beginning, is at least in conjunction with Charlize's character, we saw a couple weeks ago on Cider House, Paul Rudd getting lost at war. Like, devastates her.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it seems like she's not really into it and all this different stuff. That, you know, she had this life of freedom. Her man is paralyzed, and she's like, I guess I gotta do this now. And that's when little Tobey Maguire goes back to the orphanage and becomes Michael Caine. Here, what I liked is that Matt Damon ostensibly dies in war, or it doesn't come back or isn't the same person or whatever, at whatever point, and she's just like, well, I'm not gonna wait here, you know, waiting for this guy.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go do my
thing.
That
was a great shot.
And that was cool. Like, she's like, I love him, I wanna be with him. We see him, we see them before he leaves, doing the dirty corn off screen so hard that like a picture or a painting or something falls off the wall and shatters the the glass. I like that she's independent enough and strong enough to be like, well, I'm not going to just sit here and cry and like boohoo until my man comes back or I get official news or official word one way or the other. I've got work to do. And so that was really cool. And then it basically feels like as soon as Matt Damon rolls back into town, she just doesn't, she loses all agency and she's just like, hey, I need you to be in my golf tournament, question mark? It's this back and forth of like, will they, won't they? And eventually she says no, but then after she says no, I think we only see her maybe one other time the rest of the movie, and she's like watching him play and smiling. Like, she doesn't say anything else left out, I don't think. It's just like, for her to be one of those floating heads on the movie poster, there's the three floating heads, like these are the big three, she's basically removed entirely, and that's just sad.
I love that shot, like you're talking about, there's that actual moment when she decides she's going to move on. It's like an actual shot where like the camera is zooming in on her and you can just see the shift in her facial expression, like, nope, I'm not going to wait anymore. Like, I have an idea. Like, I'm going to get to work. And I love that. Like, I thought that worked really well. And yeah, you know, like I said earlier, like, this movie is her movie. You know, once that montage ends, for like the next 20 minutes or so, it's her like trying to scramble about this tournament. You know, she's going to visit the other two golfers, the people at the bank or whatever, the mayor, who's like a real asshole, is like trying to foreclose on her father's golf course and everything like that. And then it's like their idea to get Matt Damon, because they're like, we need a third, we need someone to represent our city and everything. So like, I don't feel like she ever thought about him ever again, you know? Like, she's like, well, he's done, like, I gotta put him out of my mind. And then so when he's sort of like forcefully reintroduced into her life, she does lose like that edge, unfortunately, where I feel like the edge should have intensified. Like, she should have gotten, you know, maybe a little harder or a little more forefront when she realized Matt Damon was gonna be back in the picture. And instead they give all that shit to the little kid, where the little kid like runs from the town meeting to like the drunk shack where Matt Damon's playing cards with all the like black dudes and everything out there. We get like that strange scene about like getting drunk and all that kind of thing. There's not enough to go around, and they're sort of spacing it out to the wrong characters at times. Like, I feel like all that stuff, all the Matt Damon getting back, bringing him back, all that should have been on her shoulders, and that would have just been way more interesting dramatically. Instead, it's the little kid, and I don't like it as much because I'm not following the kid as a character as well as I'm following Charlize or Damon.
I also wasn't clear until some point in the movie that the little kid was Jack Lemmon. Like, I don't think that was made obvious. But this movie is also super long. Like, this movie's 2 hours and 7 minutes long. Like, why is it this long? I do feel like if it was made for kids, if it was sort of Disney-fied, they would have cut out half an hour somewhere, because it's just, it feels long. Like, I don't know what you cut out. Maybe, I guess you condense the golf stuff. I guess you take out a few things here or there, but like, it just feels incredibly long.
Yeah, I would have cut like the whole first half hour probably. I would have started where it's like the depression, Charlize's father builds this great golf course and then he dies and it's on her shoulders to sort of run the company. And then that's when she gets the idea of the tournament. And then at like the 15 minute mark, we find out that she had a history with one of the golfers. And then, you know, for the next 20 minutes, we deal with that. And then, you know, we can have like an hour of golf. So there are, I feel like there's ways to streamline this and make it a little better. But yeah, it's just tough. It just wants to do all this stuff, so it's hard to see what to remove because everything is so like woven together.
Yeah, in boring ways, I guess. Like, it's just I'm out of notes. I didn't take many notes on this because I was sort of waiting for Charlize to come back. I'd already seen this movie. Even though he doesn't win, Matt Damon essentially wins in the end because he's back to his old life, essentially. You know, he's going to be a good guy again, contribute to society, comes back from 12 strokes back. So, like, you know how it's going to play out. I was just waiting for Charlize. Bummed that she didn't show up more. But is there anything else about this movie that you wanted to talk about before we get into the Pitch a Seagull game, which I feel like The Legend of Bagger Vance 2 has a lot of possibilities?
I had just two quick notes. One is about the rest of the cast of this movie. I feel like it's just cast with character actors for some reason. Like one of the golfers, the sort of older one with the dark hair, is Bruce McGill, who played D-Day in Animal House. That guy is just like a character actor. Like, I feel like you needed someone to play that role. And the other golfer, too. Like, I've only seen that guy in a few things. Those are roles that need to be sort of stronger, you know, as heavy as a Matt Damon. Like, Matt Damon being the young one, like, get two sort of more older, prestigious actors. Maybe Redford could have played one of those roles or something like that. So that just kind of bothered me, too, is just there's not a lot of support for the main cast here. By this point, Charlize has made out with both Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, mm-hmm. unfortunately. So, like, yep. I felt for her. And finally, so there's a scene in this movie where her dad shoots himself with a gun. And right. that reminded me of something about her actual life where her father was shot with a gun.
But by her mother.
By her mother, though. Yes. Yep. So I know we were sort of looking for things about her life throughout because so many things about have sort of popped up about her being a model, and then she played a model about her teeth, and then she married like a dentist in a movie and stuff. So that popped into my head.
Good catch. My only thing that I read on IMDb was that Matt Damon had never played golf before. And so he did like a month of intensive golf training and apparently golfed so much that he hurt himself. I think he looks pretty good. Like he looks, it's movie magic and stuff, but he looks convincing in this. So good job, Matt Damon.
I feel Matt Damon is also a good period piece actor. Like I buy him in Mr. Ripley. I buy him in this time period. Like I just, you know, like I feel like some actors have it and some actors don't. Like I don't feel like Keanu can really do it too well, even though I love Keanu. Like I feel like Matt Damon's got that look. Like he fits in the past.
I think everybody in this movie does for the most part. I think that was a good job in terms of casting, that we know Charlize can play in the past. Will Smith looks like he's from this era too. The other actors, I don't know if I agree with you that we need heavier hitters for the other golfers, because I don't think they're ultimately too important to the story. And I also feel like a sort of budgetary, like, when you guys are going to make less money. But I think that they, even if they're not as heavy hitters as you would like, they work here too. I think everybody, like, this movie feels of the era, which is good. It's just sort of a messy story that I wish was condensed or cleared up, and especially had more Charlize in it.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I just wish it was more streamlined. There was sort of less stuff going on. You know, either stick to the life lesson thing or just make it like a golf sports film. But pick one, I feel like it just couldn't decide.
All right, so into the back half of the program. We do have an email address if you want to email us, watch@cageclub.me. Let us know what you think of the movie, of the podcast. Just say hi, whatever you want to do. We do have our game. So we have 9 different genres. Mike, I'm going to let you go first here. Going to do a number between 1 and 9.
All right.
You have number 5, which is another one that we've done already, but the gritty reboot. So Legend of Bagger Vance 2.
Oh, no.
The gritty reboot.
I feel like I'm terrible at this game so far.
Well, this is only like the fourth time we've done it, right? So, I mean, the good news is that as soon as you get good at it, we're going to move on to another game. So just keep that in mind.
The gritty reboot of The Legend of Bagger Vance. Well, I get, you know, it's got to... Okay, so it's got to take place today. It's Jack Lemmon's grandson. He is back from Iraq. Used to be, you know, an okay golfer, but when he came back to America and he's out there like late at night swinging away at the driving range, up pops this, I'm not going to go the same route, but you ever see the show Happy on Sci-Fi Network?
No.
Let's just say, like, instead of Will Smith, he visualizes like sort of like an imaginary friend, like a character. So like in the show Happy, it's a pink unicorn that flies around Christopher Maloney and like talks to him. But in Bagger Vance 2, it'll be like, you know, more of like a Babadook type of thing like whispers into his ear like the secrets of golf and all that kind of, a benevolent one, but nonetheless like it reflects sort of the visions of horror that he's dealing with mentally, internally in his mind. And so like he's got this imaginary creature and he's out there on the range and his family thinks he's going nuts with PTSD because he's like talking to himself and he's only spending all of his time golfing. And it turns out like he's just training and he enters a tournament and he gets sort of like scouted and people remember him from before and he gets invited to play in this tournament. By the end of the movie, like throughout the film, his imaginary character sort of like becomes like cleaner and better looking and nicer and everything. And by the end, it looks just like him. By the time he's able to like re-accept himself and win the tournament and all this stuff, like his self-image has been restored and he can go on and, you know, do whatever he wants after the movie ends.
That's kind of like a gritty reboot with a happy ending, which is not too common, but I like it.
Yeah, I just tried to go gritty in look and tone and then try and keep sort of like the magical Disney ending.
Do you have any sense, I mean, we don't normally do this, but do you have any sense of who would play Jack Lemmon's grandson?
Shia.
Okay. For some reason, I was thinking Jake Gyllenhaal.
Oh, that would be good too. Yeah, no, that he actually kind of looks related.
There we go.
But I'm actually I'm finally happy with one of my answers.
All right, I got a 4, which is the Hollywood blockbuster, which I don't think we've done yet. So
no.
This is, okay, so this movie, which made no money, which, you know, had a budget of $80 million that made $40 million, apparently Hollywood has greenlit a sequel, $200 million. So The Legend of Bagger Vance 2, tentatively titled Electric Boogaloo, we have Matt Damon leaving this movie in a good spot, that he has cleaned up, confident. He now, Bagger Vance 2, for some reason, Bagger Vance is not in this movie. Like, Will Smith's not in this movie.
Yeah, he's not in mine either, I noticed.
This movie now follows the Matt Damon character, and it is a lush golf-centric film again. But he goes from course to course across America. He finds... This is something I'm going to pull from... I'm going to tap into our history. Mm. When we were doing That Thing You Do, we were talking about how it would have been nice for Charlize to follow him from place to place. And so we have Matt Damon traveling across the country, going from golf tournament to golf tournament. In each of these locations, there's like the local legend or something. They're all actors you know. And this is where the Hollywood blockbuster, like, oh, Matt Damon is golfing against, you know, Ben Affleck up in Boston. He's golfing against some cowboy down in Texas or whatever. Going across the country, going all these different places, lots of people you know. We also follow Charlize, who's back in this movie for some reason. And Charlize is like, we think that she's there. She's like, do I love this guy? Because he's, you know, getting all this acclaim. She's sort of following his career like they were following in That Thing You Do, that it's this band getting airtime, playing concerts, playing festivals, getting radio time, all this stuff, playing on TV. She's tracking it. She sees him winning golf tournament after golf tournament, you know, making money, but she's not into the money because she comes from a family of wealth, all this different stuff. And we follow her as she's following him, and you know, he's like, there's young girls in all these towns that are throwing themselves at this legendary golfer. And finally, at the end of the movie, Charlize catches up to him, and we think that, like, oh, this is gonna be the moment where Matt Damon and Charlize get back together. It's the love that was meant to be, the pre-war love. But Charlize says no, and she slaps him. She's just been following him to say what's on her mind one more time. A real downer of an ending. And then the Matt Damon character kills himself out of depression.
Oh! That's incredible. I did not see that coming.
No one does, because it doesn't make any sense. But I just want Charlize to have the upper hand in this movie. She's following him around. We think we sort of pity her, but at the end, she's just like, you are disgusting, or something, I don't know. Legend of Bagger Vance 2, the end. No, I don't know. I don't know. Electric Boogaloo is fine, I guess. But yeah, so I mean...
Oh yeah, I didn't name mine. I guess it would be Bagger Vance 2, as in T-O-O. Like,
oh.
He's also Bagger Vance.
Okay. The Baba Took, like T-O-O, T-O-T-W-O. That doesn't really work, but you know, I get it. Okay, so for the Watch a Throne Awards, I didn't pre-nominate this for anything. I don't think it's bad enough to be for worst film. I thought about putting it for best role, especially early on, but she's not in it enough to have
it's
this
close.
Stand out.
Yeah, it's so close. Like, she got the strength and the attitude and the part. It's just she doesn't have the screen time. It's really weird how center she is for the first sort of like half of this movie, and then just like really comes back to take a picture on a dance floor at one point.
I am adding this movie to the Southern Charm nomination for Best Accent Voice. Now we have Devil's Advocate and this. So just to make sure we count that all out. There's not enough of a love story to fit any of those. There's no real sex scene of note here. She doesn't die, which is surprising.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There's no real fight.
That's a shock.
She does have a couple good lines. You know what I kind of want to do? I kind of want to, when she stands up to those men at the beginning of the movie, but when she's at her father's desk and they're like trying to buy the golf course from her for 10 cents on the dollar, and she stands up to them, I think that was a really powerful, strong moment.
It's not as though you got a choice. Now your Cruel Island Golf Resort is dead and gone.
You've got the gumption of a corn, Fred and Espeluza.
Well, my gumption is not the subject here, Dale.
Well, then what is the subject, gentlemen? Huh? If it's your offer to take crawling up my hands for one-tenth of what my father spent on...
You are lucky to be getting a dime on the dollar, Adele.
Just so you gentlemen can turn right around and resell it to some Carolina paper mill for a tidy profit? The fact that you've most likely got the deal in your pocket already is not my problem.
Maybe we should come back when the shock of your father's pass isn't so...
God. Don't bother. I'm not selling.
You got a stack of debts that'll fill every storage bay and a cotton exchange,
and
Adele.
I intend to pay them off. In time.
With what? Ball? Tokens?
With the tons of money people gonna spend once they know that this is the premier resort in the South.
But I would like to nominate that for best line. What's nice is that this is the fourth movie that we've now seen that she did in 2000. You know, she wasn't in Men of Honor a ton.
No.
She wasn't in, generally speaking, she wasn't in The Yards a ton. She was in a good amount of Reindeer Games, but this is sort of the first time in a couple of weeks where she's, like, in it with actual lines, with actual, like, character motivation. I mean, she's not in it a ton here either, but she feels more of a character than she did in either of the last two episodes, really. So I like that clip, so that's good. Just looking here, anything else? Freak Out? No. Cinematography, maybe?
Maybe. It's not like one of those movies that, like, the film isn't bad enough where the cinematography saves it, you know? It's just, like, okay film with that looks amazing, as opposed to stuff we've seen in the past, which is, like, terrible, but, like, looks amazing.
Now, my only other question for you before we open it up to other categories, is Will Smith a raptor?
Yes, he most certainly is.
All right,
yes.
So Will
he's
Smith
a rapping actor.
As
and he's
Bagger
probably...
Vance.
Man, he's so fucking charming. Like, I don't care. Like, I just love him in everything. You know, that's another...
Yep.
Maybe that's just, like, a poor quality, though. Like, I shouldn't. But I just can't help it. Like, that movie came on today, this morning, with Colin Farrell and...
Oh, Winter's Tale.
Will,
yep, it was on HBO.
Winter's
this morning,
Tale,
yep.
Yeah. And I waited to watch the Will Smith parts. I was like, I'm going to watch
the devil?
I knew. Yeah, I was like, I know he's in this movie. I'm waiting for him. And, like, I wonder if that's, like, something with me, like, I have to get over because, like, I can't fairly judge Will Smith just because, like, I don't know. Like, I have, like, this thing about him,
no,
like, the
I
way
really
you
like
and,
him. I mean,
you
I said
and
it,
Zeph. Like,
I said at the top, right? Like, I really
yeah, yeah.
liked him. Like, he was my first favorite actor, I think, because I loved Independence Day and I loved Men in Black and, like, these movies in the 90s, like, those were my 90s blockbusters that I loved, and I sort of followed him for a while after that, and even when he's in a not a great movie, like, I always thought, like, I sort of went through a little bit of a house cleaning. I never got rid of a ton of DVDs, but I went through a little bit of a house cleaning a few years ago and got rid of a bunch of DVDs, but, like, I didn't get rid of any of his, because I was like, there might come a day where we do him for a podcast, because I just like him in things. Although, I don't know that he would necessarily be interesting, because I feel like he kind of plays a similar type of character. Like, he kind of always plays himself. I mean, that's always incredibly likable, unless you get to a movie like, what was the one that came out where, not Concussion, but around the same time as Concussion, where he...
Oh, the one after that with the, when he's writing letters to...
Yes. I don't
emotions
remember
and stuff.
Yeah, what is that movie? He's going to be in Aladdin? Is he going to be a genie in Aladdin?
I hope not. I don't know.
Oh, he's also in Suicide Squad, so, I mean, we don't really necessarily want to do that.
But he's great in the Suicide Squad.
He
helped me get through that movie. Like, literally, I was like...
Collateral Beauty.
Collateral Beauty. Oh, man.
And that's what's sort of sad about Will Smith, is that, like, bring it back to Charlize for a second, he'll do Hancock in 08 along with 7 Pounds, and then he sort of stops acting. He comes back in Men in Black 3 4 years later, and then After Earth, which is not great. He's apparently got a cameo in Anchorman 2. He's got that one scene in Winter's Tale. He's in Focus with Margot Robbie, which is not great. He's in Concussion, which I didn't see but didn't hear great things about. Suicide Squad, yeah. Collateral Beauty, Bright. So he's back now, but he took like 4 or 5 years off acting.
He's got like kids that are very much in the industry too, so I could see him taking some years to help Jaden and Willow get their stuff off the ground and all. And he did that movie with Jaden too, which Jaden is actually, you know, it's hard because of his public image as well. And like, I don't know, youngsters, like I'm just an old fart now and I don't understand, you know, that generation, but that kid's not a bad actor either. Karate Kid, he's pretty good in that. I'm kind of surprised. He's got talent, so
maybe we do a podcast where it's the whole, we need to come up with a name for it, but it's all the Smiths. It's Will and Jada and Willow and Jaden. Because I think it's mostly Will, and then there's probably a bunch of Jada, too. Mm-hmm. Then we have a little bit, we sort of take a quick detour for Karate Kid, and we take a quick detour for Willow's stuff. I'm just not sure what Smith, like, Smith is hard to, we could probably find something.
I know. It is literally, like, the most generic last name in the history of names. So, like, what can you do?
But I'm looking, you know, we have the Bad Boys movies, which would be great. We have I, Robot, Return to Shia. We have Hitch.
The Men in Black films, man.
Men in Black films. Hitch, which is not great, but is fun. I Am Legend.
Hitch is sort of like that Gosling movie where he's like a relationship expert kind of thing, right? Where he...
I don't know. What one is that? Is that Crazy Stupid Love?
Yeah. It's kind of, he plays like...
I haven't seen that yet.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't really spoil anything, but it's sort of like a Hitch type thing.
All right.
It's just like a Casanova. I think in that he's teaching Kevin James how to be suave or something.
I mean, so we have Will Smith as the best raptor, which is rapper or musician turned actor. Do we want to, I don't think we should nominate him necessarily for best male actor role. Like, is he on par with like Tom Hanks in That Thing You Do? Or De Niro or Cuba in Men of Honor, or Keanu in Devil's Advocate.
Oh, man, Cuba is so good. I mean, I just keep thinking about Men of Honor. Cuba and De Niro were, like, going toe-to-toe in that movie. I feel like this material sort of, like, isn't helping. You know, he's doing the best he can with this material, right. But I don't think it's the kind of role that's going to get him nominated.
Are there other categories that you think we should nominate this movie for? So we have it for cinematography. We have Will Smith as musician-turned-actor. Anything else of note?
No, not necessarily. No, I couldn't really. I was watching it this time, like, trying to rack my brain, going through it, like, can I come up with a new category? Is there anything that's going to fit the old one that Joey might not think of? We pretty much came up with, like, the same.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm good.
The one thing that I want to point out about these awards is that I feel like we ran into it a little bit with both Cage and Keanu in finding other male actors to nominate for Best and Worst. Here, so far, we're through 14 movies, and we have no women nominated for Best Role or Worst Role. It's Charlize or Bust, pretty much. Which
That's weird.
I mean, it sort of makes sense in that when she's the lead of the movie, it's not like there's, like, unless there's another, like, a really female-centric movie, it usually, like, a lot of movies are sort of, like, one and one, right? Like, there's a guy and a girl. Like, here, there's two guys and a girl, whatever. So, you know, if we were doing a Will Smith podcast, we can nominate Matt Damon. So that's a little unfortunate there. I can see why, like, it was tough, because, like, in a lot of Cage and Keanu movies, you know, they are the guy in it, right? And so, unless you're, like, in an action movie. But it's just weird, and I guess maybe not weird if you think about the roles for women in Hollywood, but, like,
right.
There's nothing bad enough to be nominated for worst role, which I guess is a good thing, but there's also been no other really strong female characters in any of her movies yet, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, the only one I can think of is Erykah Badu, right? She was in Cider House Rules. And
but she's
she
not
was just
in there enough to be like...
Right,
you know,
right. That's Yeah, exactly. That was exactly what I was going to say. It's like, she's there, but she's not really like in the movie all so much.
Yep.
That's crazy. It's. I was thinking about that watching it this time. I was like, she's the only woman in this fucking movie. And it's like, the little boy has a mom. Like, where the hell is she? And I don't know. It's very strange. I did get that like weird feeling this time watching it, so hopefully when she's the centerpiece, like when she's leading movies, she can fix stuff like that, you know, like instead of her just being the lead and acting against two guys, like maybe she could be the lead and acting against two women or a woman and a guy and like can sort of like flip that somehow. That is definitely something that we're dealing with that we weren't experiencing with a male actor.
And I'm trying to think
part
down
of,
the
part
road
of the industry.
I mean, there's other women in Mad Max, but they're all sort of the quiet, the brides, which is not
it's mostly Max and her. And
but then I was thinking, you know, when we get to Atomic Blonde, we can nominate Sofia Boutella because she's good in that movie. So there's at least going to be one.
Yeah.
I hope she doesn't win by default.
I've actually seen the trailer of Beyond Flux, and I know that there's like at least one more kick-ass action chick in that movie somewhere. I haven't seen the movie yet, but I've seen the trailer.
I mean, now that as we're recording this, the trailer for Tully is floating around, and
Christina Ricci is in Monster. I've seen Monster.
Oh, so she'll probably be nominated. Yeah, I haven't seen Monster yet. That's coming up soon.
Okay.
Whoever plays Tully in Tully will probably be nominated. So there's stuff coming. It's just few and far between, unfortunately. So next week, though, we have a return to a film that we have already covered on this podcast network. Another trip down Keanu Lane for Sweet November. So it's going to be interesting to see this movie from her perspective as opposed to his next week, Sweet November.
Really looking forward to that. Because I don't know about you, but I don't know. I feel like I've just been a little off my game with this podcast for some reason. Like, I don't know, maybe it's because, you know, she isn't the lead in all these movies yet, and you sort of have to deal with, like, a lot of other stuff, but I'm looking forward to getting back into sort of a comfort zone with Keanu being there, and sort of, like, maybe getting me back into shape when it comes to podcasting or something. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I don't know that she's really going to be the lead in a lot of movies. That's just what Hollywood is, unfortunately. I mean, like, you know, she's going to win an Oscar for Monster, and, like, that same year as Italian Job, and she's not the lead. I mean, she's one of the leads, but she's not the lead. I mean, in Mad Max, she's the lead, but it's also a lot of Tom Hardy. Like, you know, these movies that sort of define her career, she's a lot of the times either not necessarily the lead, she's sort of like the second lead, or just the romantic interest or something. So when we get to movies like young adult, like, I think as we get into, like, I'm interested to see, because she's obviously well respected and well regarded and, like, cast in really good strong roles, or at least in terms of leading roles, but I wonder when that switch is going to come, because I feel like it has to be soon. Will it be before Monster? Will Monster be it? Like, when will she be type of actress to lead movies, as opposed to just being, like, his girlfriend or his wife or whatever?
Mm-hmm. For me, it's just been a bit of an adjustment that was unforeseen. So it's keeping things interesting, for sure.
Anyway, for all things Watch the Throne and all of our other Keanu podcasts, if you want to prepare for next week, if you want to go back and listen to our Sweet November podcast from Keanu Club, you can go to cageclub.me, facebook.com/cageclub, or at cageclubpod on Twitter. We're up to about 15 or 16 shows, I think. This episode is coming out on, drumroll please, March 2. Oh, you know what that means. Tomorrow, your podcast comes out, Third Time's a Charm. That's coming out tomorrow. We also have come out in the last month, The Contenders, so go check that out for more strong women. We also have Winona Forever, which came out, I think, last week or maybe this week. So go check out Winona Forever, which is a new Winona Ryder podcast that we have on our network. So we are diversifying. It took us a while. We are diversifying, focusing more on women. So that's cool. Check that out. The Contenders. Check out Winona Forever. Check out tomorrow, Third Time's a Charm. And then stay tuned in March for another podcast, which I think should be hopefully launching. I think what we talked about on previous episodes, I think, knock on wood, Nico's The Billy Club podcast, along with his husband Kevo and their friend Tori, the Daredevil Comics podcast, should come out sometime next month. We are in the midst of a lot of new releases podcasts. The most we've had, I mean, I was going to say the most we've had since December, but that was like 2 months ago. So, I mean, like, you know, it hasn't been that long, but I'm just excited because there's all these new podcasts that I'm not directly involved with that, like, Mike and I can sort of, Mike has his own podcast. So, like, all these shows I can be a guest on, but I don't have to do any work on, which is great. I love it. So good job, everyone. But yeah, go to cageclub.me, facebook.com/cageclub, at cageclubpod on Twitter. Go check out all of those shows, all of our shows. March 1st means it's going to be Fast and Furious, which came out yesterday, the fourth one. So we are between Tokyo Drift and Fast 5. This is Joe 2's least favorite Fast and Furious movie, so I wonder if he liked it more. We have not recorded that yet, so we will see.
You're on that long flight back from Japan.
Yes, to wherever, and maybe Letty dies. I don't know. I mean, it's a heartbreaking movie. I don't remember anything about it, except Gal Gadot is in it, so I'm excited to see.
Oh, she shows up in 4?
She's in 4, 5, 6.
I've only seen 4 once. It's my least seen Furious film.
And I think Joe's only seen it once or twice, considering he's seen Tokyo Drift enough to, like, have quoted everything as we were watching it.
And to have gone to Japan to, like, do a Tokyo Drift tour on his own and, like, visit the locations.
Mm-hmm. To have only seen the fourth one once or twice speaks volumes to how much he does not like it. But Gal Gadot does show up at some point in this movie. She's 4, 5, 6. And also, speaking of Gal Gadot, go check out The Contenders, which came out, the episode on, want to say the 20th. That would be the Wonder Woman episode that I was on. So Tobin's sister Aislinn, the co-hosts of that show, and I spoke about Wonder Woman. So lots of Gal Gadot talk. If they leave it in, there's also lots of Fast and Furious talk, because of course there is. So go check that out. But anyway, one more time, one final time. Cageclub.me, facebook.com/cageclub, at cageclubpod on Twitter, watch at cageclub.me. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
And we'll see you next time on Watch the Throne.
4! Straight down the middle. It went straight down the middle. Then it started to hook just a wee bit. And that's when my caddy lost sight of it. That little white pellet has never been found to this day. went straight down the middle.